Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, upon this rock you shall build my church. Christ's words to St. Peter took concrete form some 500 years ago with the laying of the first cornerstone of the St. Peter's Basilica we know today. Stay with me as we look at that historic day and at the Vatican office responsible for the upkeep of the Basilica and its archives. Also, we'll be hearing about one man's mission to make the Basilica known to people who may never have the chance to come to Rome. Skyline wouldn't be the same without it. For almost five centuries, the towering cupola of St. Peter's Basilica has been gracing the west bank of the Tiber River, drawing pilgrims, tourists, and artists from the world over to admire the work of some of history's greatest architects, sculptors, and artists. Well, St. Peter's Basilica, like the Vatican Museums and the Swiss Guards, celebrated its 500th birthday in 2006. And leading the festivities, just a little less than a year at his new job, was the new Pope.
Possa la circostanza felice del cinquecentesimo anniversario risvegliare in tutti i cattolici il desiderio di essere pietre vive.
Pope Benedict there inviting the faithful to be the cornerstones of the faith, recalling that in April, some 500 years ago, Pope Julius II laid the first founding stone of the current St. Peter's Basilica.
Slightly more than 500 years have passed since the first stone of the Second Vatican Basilica was laid, and yet it remains a living place. It is not a museum. It is a spiritual organism, and the stones also reflect this vitality.
Il mondo intero ammira nella possente armonia delle sue forme.
The basilica that you see today did take 120 years, but it's important to know there was a moment of a decision, a moment of a foundation, and the whole laying of that cornerstone that would turn into this magnificent monument.
Elizabeth Lev is professor of Christian art and architecture for Duquesne University's Italian campus. She points out that the basilica tourists and pilgrims see today is not the first to have been built on this very site, and so Pope Julius's plan for a new basilica was shockingly revolutionary for his time.
500 years ago, Pope Julius II took an extraordinary decision, and it was to demolish an 1,100-year-old basilica that had been built by the Emperor Constantine for the Christian community in Rome right after the legalization of Christianity. This church had been around for a millennium. It had seen the incarnation of Holy Roman emperors. It had seen councils. It had seen popes come and go. It had seen the popes leave to Avignon. It had welcomed their return, and Julius II swept away this 1,100-year-old basilica. He didn't do it with this idea of canceling the old. He did it with the intention to project the church into its future. And the basilica we see today is a church that has been designed from the first stone in 1506 to be the church that would say that would be for the next millennium and the next millennium again.
Ricordare con gratitudine i sommi pontefici che hanno voluto quest'opera straordinaria sulla tomba dell'apostolo Pietro. Ricordo con ammirazione gli artisti che hanno contribuito con il loro genio a edificarla e a decorarla.
Such ingenious architects as Bramante, Michelangelo, Maderno, and Bernini contributed to making St. Peter's the center point of all Christendom, connecting humanity to the heavens.
It's the parish church of the whole world. St. Peter's is the home of St. Peter's grave. It's the place where the Pope says Mass, and as he stands above the grave of St. Peter, it's the reminder that he, the successor of Peter, is the vicar of Christ on earth. It's the church whose doors are open to every single person in the world, and its arms of the square and its huge space inside and that colossal dome are all there to draw us home.
Maintaining that earthly home is a mammoth enterprise, so a special Vatican office was especially set up to care for the basilica and the square, the Fabrica of San Pietro.
St. Peter's Basilica employs an army of what we call the San Pietrini. These are the caretakers of the basilica who not only serve as the custodians up and down the long nave of St. Peter and its aisles, but they also are there for the maintenance of that basilica, and the meticulous care and upkeep of that church goes on every single day. Often early in the morning you can see the San Pietrini out with the engineers checking on a crack or a place where the marble veneer has come off, or watching over the need to restore the piers that are supporting the dome. So St. Peter's really, from everything you see, there are people specialized in taking care of the marble veneers, the mosaics, and then, of course, the huge structural questions of the supporting of the dome, the supporting of the canopy, and all of these other thoughts and concerns. So the people in charge of the care of this basilica, the whole operation that looks after the tremendous amount of maintenance that St. Peter's Basilica requires, the Fabrica of St. Peter's, the Fabrica di San Pietro, the works of St. Peter's, have a very distinctive coat of arms, if you will, which is instead of the two crossed keys that you usually see under the papal tiara, they have two keys that sit side by side, and where you see those on the various thresholds or doorways or different monuments in St. Peter's, you know that they're monuments that were given and are maintained by the Fabrica of St. Peter's. And this is the office that deals with every single aspect of maintaining, taking care of, and running a church that size.
But will Pope Julius's futuristic vision 500 years ago be able to keep pace with the changing times of centuries to come?
I think the church, from its very inception with the new foundation stone, when Julius II took a step that he knew would be unpopular, he was looking towards a great triumphant church of the future, a church where Christians from all over the world in his mind would come to this church and be proud of this church, the place that truly would look like the Caput Mundi, the head of the Christian world. And so when he first designed his church, he applied in the construction, his architect, Donato Bramante, who was the brilliant architect of the early Renaissance, Donato Bramante designed a church that was an amalgamation of two of the greatest monuments from antiquity, the Pantheon and the Basilica of Constantine, a public building and a religious building, merged together to be the ultimate reliquary for St. Peter. The treasure that church houses is one of our greatest treasures of the church. And so As the church progressed, as the years progressed, the church keeps growing. It has kept growing, and it continues to grow, and it continues to look to the future. From an original Greek cross plan extended into a Latin cross plan to make the church bigger so it could hold the 60,000 people it holds today. From the Latin cross plan to the giant square that holds 175,000 people, added by Bernini in the 1660s. To the Via della Conciliazione that was added under Mussolini in 1929, the church has just continued to expand outwards to welcome more and more people to the church. And I don't know what the future holds for St. Peter's, but I'm certain that the future holds continuing gathering of the people and a continuing beacon for Catholics all over the world.
Elizabeth Lev, professor of Christian art and architecture for Duquesne University's Italian campus. As we heard earlier, the Fabbrica of St. Peter's, or the Fabrique as it's also known, is the Vatican office responsible for the maintenance and daily care of the Basilica and its facilities. Cristina Carlo Stella took over the management of the Fabrique back in 2004, and in this, the first of a four-part series, she tells us in more detail about what the Fabrique and its army of San Pietrini actually do.
The major task is to look after the Basilica proper. However, it also encompasses the Basilica's grounds, and that means that it is the perimeter of the Basilica. Also, La Chiesa di Santo Stefano, which is that small little church that's located in the back of the apse of the Basilica St. Peter. The Vatican Acropolis underneath, of course, which is a whole archaeological setting where the Basilica actually rests. And then there's quite a number of interesting offices that is also under the supervision of the Fabrica. For example, the Mosaic Studio, the Vatican Mosaic Studio. The Vatican Mosaic Studio, for example, was founded because, as you know, in the 17th century, all of the paintings, the altarpieces that were painted within the Basilica began to be transferred into mosaic technique. And so in order to keep up the maintenance and the restoration of these surfaces, they actually founded a specific mosaic studio. So mosaic studio is under the supervision of the Fabrica. Another major office, besides the office for the Vatican Acropolis, is, for example, the historical archive.
Probably the largest church in all of Christianity, St. Peter's Basilica covers an area of 2.3 hectares, that's almost 6 acres, and has a capacity for more than 60,000 people. When Pope Julius II died in 1513, the original architect Bramante was followed over the next 100 years or so by a succession of other architects, including Giuliano da Sangallo, Raphael, Antonio da Sangallo, Michelangelo, Giacomo della Porta, and Domenico Fontana, and finally Carlo Moderno, whose facade for the Basilica might have made Michelangelo turn in his grave.
The thing that remains impressed, especially on art historians, is the fact that the facade is too big for the cupola, the dome of St. Peter's. So it gets eclipsed a little bit by the facade, mm-hmm. if you're standing too close to the Basilica.
Exactly. So Michelangelo is really the chief architect of the Basilica for quite a number of years, and he dies with that role.
Right.
He never sees the building of his great masterpiece of the cupola actually done. It was Giacomo della Porta. And right now we do have an Italian scholar who just recently has published a very interesting study on the contribution of Giacomo della Porta for actually the cupola, Michelangelo's cupola. Because again, we have some extraordinary treasures here at the Fabrique of St. Peter. One of them is a wooden model of the cupola according to Michelangelo's design. This model was then restored and modified by the architects that came after Michelangelo. But these are some of the treasures that the Fabrique has.
You came here, what, about 2004? Were there any moments that really stand out for you as to a big surprise, something that really excited you, apart from getting into the archives and feeling the ink on the pages of Michelangelo?
My goodness, that is also a very, very that is also a very difficult question. Every single day is an exciting day here, I have to say. I feel very, very honored to be working for such an important site for the universality of the church, of the Catholic Church. This is a real clue point where you have faithful from all over the world, but not only faithful, I mean people from all over the world who come. It also involves a big challenge and a very big responsibility because I think this is why my job is particularly exciting, because you don't want people just to come and look at the Basilica as an artistic monument or as a church monument. You want to convey another message that accompanies that experience, that aesthetic experience, but you want them to understand that there is a real, real spiritual profoundness in this place. Of course, if you're faithful, you know, it's where St. Peter was martyred. So this is really the keystone of the Church of Christ. It's here, it's right here, it's tangible. But we want every single person, and we are getting a lot of tourists from the Orient, for example, Chinese and others, who are not Christian, non-Christian people who are coming, and we want to convey that message. We want them to have a real spiritual experience here, whether they're faithful or not. And this is sort of the real task that I try to work out every single day that I'm here. There is something more. And I think this is a very important concept, which is also being taken up by quite a number of international organizations right now. As you know, for example, at UNESCO, you don't have just the World Heritage Convention, but you also right now have had a convention that is for immaterial heritage, and that's very important, because for us these are steps that have been taken that really help our work. We have here actually one of the key places, not only for material heritage, church heritage, but also immaterial heritage. The two go side by side. If it wasn't for that fantastic spiritual devotional heritage, you wouldn't have St. Peter's Basilica.
How, for example, is this office trying to help bring this spirituality closer to people who are foreign to Christianity?
Well, we've done it in quite a number of ways. One of the things that I've noticed, and these are just small little practical things that I wanted to put immediately when I arrived. I noticed that crowds of people were entering the Basilica as if they were approaching either a museum or an artistic monument. A lot of them were just not conscious of what they're walking into and the importance of this site. So one of the things that I wanted to do immediately was to have a message in different languages as they were entering the atrium, the narthex of the Basilica, where people would feel welcome, but at the same time there was a message saying you are walking into a spiritual place. I would want to expound on that, but unfortunately the dimensions of the Basilica are such that it's very difficult. But if I could, I would put a sacred music background within the Basilica, I think that works very, very well. There are Romanesque basilicas, actually Romanesque monasteries or Cistercian abbey churches, where you walk in and immediately, if you hear a Gregorian chant, people behave differently. There's a real psychological preparation that sacred music can do for crowds walking into a religious environment. Unfortunately, the dimensions are such that we have tried it. We have tried it a couple years ago under Cardinal Marchisano, who used to be the Archpriest of the Basilica. We tried. We experimented on that. But the sound is just completely absorbed by Michelangelo's cupola, so it's very difficult to do that. But if I could, I would. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to do is the same thing down in the Vatican grottos. Because again, you had school groups walking into this very special and sacred environment, because this is really the corridor that is leading you to the most sacred place of the site, which is the tomb of St. Peter. And you had school groups walking in, a lot of children walking in, you know, laughing, talking aloud, and they just were not conscious. And so we did the same thing, only that in the Vatican grottos, we don't have the problem of this great vaulting space, but it is more of a limited space. So we were able to put a sacred music background, and we have noticed a drastic change in the behavior of people. They would just go in and they would realize, oh, there's something here. And of course, the Vatican grottos are filled with tombs of saints, popes. Yeah, it's a very, very special place.
A very special place indeed. Well, thanks there to Cristina Carlostella, General Manager of the Fabrique of St. Peter's. Millions have trod down its nave, and countless have stared into the dizzying heights of its dome. But how many have actually studied St. Peter's Basilica or tried to comprehend this elaborate monument as an achievement that transcends all earthly bounds?
I was actually in the seminary for 4 years, and then after that I spent 2 years working in the missions. That also influenced my decision to do this work, because being in the seminary and in the missions, I felt that I got so much from the church that I needed to give something back. I needed an apostolate, a work for the church.
Later becoming a web and computer expert in the business industry, Alan Howard felt driven by that desire to work for the church and put his personal expertise and his own personal passion for St. Peter's Basilica to the task.
Like many people, I toured St. Peter's Basilica probably 15 to 20 years ago now, and realized I was missing so much, because there's so much there. And over the years, I kept coming back to St. Peter's and fell in love with it. And through different guides that I went to the Basilica with, it started to unfold for me, to open up, and I started to get more of the meaning, the significance, the beauty of St. Peter's. And through falling in love with St. Peter's, I decided to go even further and study it. And so I started collecting books and sources, and finding that there weren't a lot of good online sources for St. Peter's, I eventually decided to create a website myself.
After more than 3 years of hard work, Howard created the site www.stpetersbasilica.org. often consulting with Vatican offices and experts to fine-tune details. He's careful to say the nonprofit site is not officially endorsed by the Vatican, but he hopes his chosen apostolate will bring people closer to the faith while piquing their curiosity about one of Christianity's most hallowed shrines.
So many people go through the Basilica now, thousands, even daily, and they're really missing the true meaning of the Basilica, which is the spiritual. It's all there to bring people closer to God. And unfortunately, many people are just going through it and looking at it as a museum, which you can do because the Basilica is so beautiful and the works of art are so precious there. But to go deeper is to find the true meaning, the spiritual significance. The church has always done this in many ways, through music, through art, through all that is good, to kind of bring us into the beauty of the Catholic Church and teach us the significance. I like to kind of close my tours when I give them of St. Peter's Basilica and show them the fantastic dome there of Michelangelo and look up at those words, tu es Petrus, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And I tell people, all of this is our answer to those words of Jesus to Peter. And then I tell them, what's going to be our individual response to the words of Jesus?
Howard's own response was to compile hundreds of pages of floor plans, photographs, and facts about the Basilica, citing authoritative texts and Catholic journals.
One thing that many people like to do is go to a floor plan map of the Basilica and just kind of click on the different altars and monuments and just kind of randomly look around the Basilica. They'll also find a map of the grottos and see where John Paul II is buried. They'll be able to go to a map of the square and identify all the different points out in the square, see the place where John Paul II was shot, for example. There's also a number of documents that are there from different sources. So if they want to go deeper, they can read some scholarly books and articles about St. Peter's Basilica.
So is this site more for the pilgrim, or is it even directed towards serious researchers, art historians?
Right. I'm trying to do both, in that the casual pilgrim who has is getting ready to go to St. Peter's or has been there can go to the site and learn a little bit more, go to the next step, and just kind of browse around through St. Peter's. But also, I get email daily from serious scholars who are doing articles on St. Peter's and are starting to use the site as a resource. And I want to make it a resource with the best scholarly information for those serious students of St. Peter's as well.
Alan Howard, editor of the website stpetersbasilica.org. That's all one word without punctuation. It's stpetersbasilica.org. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.